Good afternoon, patrons. I'm John. This is Many a True Nerd, and this is the December Patron Cast. Hello there. Merry Christmas to all of you, except those of you who don't celebrate Christmas. Not Merry Christmas to you. Not that I'm wishing you actively a bad December or anything. Have a lovely whatever you celebrate, or if you don't, like, just have a nice day in general. It's really scarily close to Christmas, actually. It's... when is the date today? Hang on, what is the date today? It's the 19th when I'm recording this, and I'm assuming I'm going to put out on the 20th, which is 5 days before Christmas, which is a problem, because I haven't actually done most of my Christmas shopping at this point. It's got to the stage where I'm now kind of sufficiently worried about delivery dates. I can't do any of it online anymore. I actually had to go into a town and do it on a high street today, which was a horrible, horrible experience. It reminded me why, 4 years ago, I stopped doing any kind of Christmas shopping on a high street, and instead I just started doing it all online, because bloody hell, is everything crowded at the moment. It's terrible. And I'm a fast walker, so I get really frustrated when I'm walking just like anywhere, because if people are walking around like more slowly than me, I get very angry. I don't say anything because I'm British, and therefore if we're if we're ever annoyed or angry about something, or there's something we feel is wrong, we don't actually say or do anything about it. We just kind of silently kind of fume and kind of glare at the people who we think are doing it wrong. We never say anything to them or do anything to kind of try and correct the behavior or anything. It's just, we just kind of fume silently, which I was doing a lot of while walking very slowly behind people who don't seem to know how to walk. So yes, Christmas shopping, that's not been good. So I'm going to leap straight into kind of some of the discussion points this month, because I actually had two discussion things I kind of really wanted to get into that kind of got brought up in the the question submissions. Thank you very much for all your questions and so forth. So kind of the first one I wanted to kind of touch on, which I thought was kind of particularly interesting, was someone brought up the Kotaku blacklist and blacklisting in general as like a discussion point, which I thought was interesting enough. I kind of wanted to kind of go over it in a bit more detail, because it's kind of something that's worth kind of discussing in detail. For those of you who are not familiar with this issue, basically, Kotaku revealed earlier this year, not that long ago actually, if I recall correctly, that basically they've been blacklisted by certain publishers. Basically because they released information that the publisher didn't want released. The one that's probably most famous is Bethesda and Kotaku don't get on anymore, because back when there were kind of the very early rumours about Fallout 4, which I think at that time it was kind of, the rumours were mainly about the setting was going to be Boston. And whether that was actually a leak or whether that was actually just someone making some educated guesses based on what we already knew from Fallout 3, because honestly, I saw those, the Fallout 4 leak, whatever it was, a year ago, whatever it was now. And, I remember looking and just thinking, honestly, you could have constructed the vast majority of that based on information we had in Fallout 3 and then just sort of filled in the blanks out of guesswork. So I was never sure whether that was really actually a true leak or not. I don't know. But anyway, Kotaku published it and Bethesda didn't like it, and kind of as a result now, Kotaku don't receive pre-release press copies of Bethesda games, which is unfortunate for them because they're a big outlet. I was able to get hold of a pre-release copy of Fallout 4. Not by much. I only got it on the Saturday when it was coming out on the Tuesday, if I recall correctly, the days of the week when that happened. But, it's a pretty kind of big deal for them. So, did Kotaku do something wrong by publishing those rumours that might kind of reduce people's enjoyment of the game? Did Bethesda overreact by kind of blacklisting them? I think kind of my response to that is everyone's a little bit in the wrong, a little bit in the right there. There's a spectrum of behaviour that both a publisher and a journalist, is how I'm going to refer to those parties. Because this isn't really just a discussion about Bethesda and Kotaku. This is a wider discussion about game publishers, i.e. the people who actually, own the rights to the game and control what information, how it's disseminated, and the gaming press in general, i.e. those that kind of talk about those rumours. And for the sake of argument, I will include YouTubers in that number, because of course this isn't just an issue that affects the traditional press. For example, we know Jim Sterling fell out with Konami, who's been very open about the fact that Konami blacklisted him long ago. He's talked about it openly on the Jimquisition on several occasions. So there's kind of a spectrum of behaviour that both parties, both the press and the publisher, kind of could exhibit. At one extreme, the press could be exclusively nice. They could suck up to publishers in order to get exclusives and indeed to get a greater chance of kind of receiving big advertising spend. And I think, like, you know, for example, you could theoretically accuse IGN of that. And of course, there was the big controversy a while ago with Kane and Lynch 2, where, you know, it received a, not even a terrible review, just a middling review at the same time as advertising spend had been kind of committed to Kane and Lynch 2. So therefore, journalists were let go as a consequence of that. That's an example of, you know, clearly the pendulum has swung to an extreme there. And that is wrong. Now, on the other hand, there's kind of the other extreme, which is the press could take these kind of pre-release copies that they're given, and though technically most people, well, sometimes they're asked to sign non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, sometimes they're just told, by the way, we're sending you this and we want you to follow these rules, with the understanding if you don't follow these rules, you know, we're going to not send you any future copies in future, you shall be dead to us. If you just take one of those copies, and you then kind of take information and you release it earlier than you're supposed to. Well, one, excluding the fact that if you sign something, you might technically be breaking the law. But as far as I'm aware, this has never really gone to a court of law, so it's not really been legally tested. You're being unprofessional. You're being a dick. You're not even being particularly player friendly, because if you're spoiling stuff for a game that hasn't even come out yet, you're really just ruining people's enjoyment of that game. That's not really a good scenario either. And in that case, if you're being blacklisted, it's really kind of fair that you've been blacklisted. You've kind of brought that on yourself. So that's kind of a wrong behaviour as well. Now, the publishers, of course, have their spectrum of behaviour that they can kind of fall on too. They could release absolutely every piece of information about the game, which generally doesn't happen, but that could actually spoil the game quite a lot. So if you consider it, this happens more in films than in games. Like, think about film trailers that kind of give away way too much of the plot. For example, so I think the big example recently is the most recent trailer for Superman versus Batman: Dawn of Justice, which is just a ridiculous example of way too much information being given away in a trailer. Don't worry, I'm not going to say what that information is in case you've avoided seeing that trailer because you heard it was ridiculously spoilery. But straight up, that kind of pretty much to me ruins the first two thirds of the film from the information in the Batman versus Superman trailer. I can now figure out what the starting point is, what Act 1's going to be, what the initial conflicts are going to be, roughly how it's going to play out, how it's going to be resolved. Meaning the only thing that I can't figure out from that trailer is the final big confrontation in the third act, how exactly that's going to play out. But I'm going to guess, as they want this to be the first big film in a big multi-film franchise, pretty much everyone's making it out of this alive, so therefore I can put in some reasonably educated guesses for exactly how it's going to go down in the third act too. Like, pretty much, I can write a plot synopsis for exactly how Batman versus Superman is going to go, so what's the point of me going to see it in cinema? Like, after seeing that trailer, I'm now way less likely to bother going to see it. For the most part, games don't do that. I can't think of an example off the top of my head of a game where so much information was released about it ahead of time that I actually was much less interested in actually playing it. But, like, that is an example of an extreme behaviour that a publisher could exhibit. And I think that's something players do actually understand, by the way, because if you consider, like, how many people desperately wanted to be kept in the dark and avoid Fallout 4 spoilers when they started doing the rounds, I think it kind of says that actually a lot of players genuinely don't want to have too much information about a game. They actively try and shield themselves from learning too much about the game, which I think is very interesting. So I think kind of players acknowledge they don't actually want to be given all the information too early. Now, the alternative thing that a publisher can do, of course, on the other extreme is they can use blacklists and ultimately lawyers to try and take, you know, well, one, try and shut down or ultimately potentially take petty revenge against absolutely anyone who even discusses things or speculates in a way that they don't like. Konami is kind of the biggest offender here. Of course, we'll kind of, some of you may remember, and again, this is something that Jim Sterling's covered in detail, that, like, when there were discussions around Kojima originally, they actually issued takedowns against videos that simply discussed and speculated about Kojima, which is an incredibly legally dubious thing to do. Like, there's no way that is in any way in breach of copyright, a video talking about and speculating about Kojima. There's absolutely no way legally that should stand up to a takedown notice. So it was just plain wrong of them to do, but they just used the tools that were available to try and shut down a topic that they didn't want discussed, which was utterly ridiculous. So that extreme is something that's actually more present in the gaming industry. Now, in terms of where both press and publishers ought to really live on those spectrums, all four extremes are wrong, but this is just kind of about common sense, to be honest. It's just what press and publishers both need to do is do what's best for the gaming ecosystem. It is generally a good thing if publishers release games to influencers, whether that be press, YouTubers, all of us who make up the ecosystem. It's generally a good thing for everyone if all of those people like us play the game and we release the footage just a little bit before launch, like a day or two before it actually comes out. And it's absolutely fair and right that there are some caveats in place for that. And just so you know, the two most common caveats that kind of come out, and obviously I don't want to kind of talk about specific examples here, but I've seen this a couple of times. Generally what they'll say to you is, we will send this to you, you know, say a week before launch, but you can't actually publish any of the footage till a day before launch, and you can't kind of, you know, review it or kind of, you know, tweet, Reddit post, whatever, kind of generally kind of put any opinions out about it until that same time, a day before launch, is fairly typical. And also, when you do put it out a day before launch, in the period between the day before launch and it actually being released to the general public, don't get past a certain point in the game. They'll normally kind of name a mission and say, please don't play past this point, please don't post, like, you know, the ending straight away. Now, that's actually a good thing, because that means it gets coverage, it builds hype, which is good for the publisher. It means that we get to play the games early and we get to have our videos early, so it's not a mad panic of trying to get hold of the game at midnight, play it as rapid as possible to get our videos out the door as fast as possible. We're not basically, you know, racing our PCs and upload speeds against each other trying to get the videos out. That's a good thing. We've got time to actually make our videos and come up with our opinions. If we got the games at the same time as the general public and had to try and get our reviews and part ones out as soon as possible, we would be rushing the game and we'd do the games a disservice and we'd do our fans a disservice because we'd be rushing and we wouldn't do our best work. And the fact that there is that kind of threshold where we get it, say, a week before, but we can't publish it till 5-6 days later, that creates a fair playing field on YouTube for everyone. Because the thing is, like, say, the very biggest magazines, the very biggest gaming websites, will probably get hold of their games, you know, maybe a month ahead of time. For example, they will probably get it earlier than me, whereas I might only get it a week before the time. But if all of us can only post our videos at the same moment, it's more of a fair playing field. You know, IGN and Eurogamer and whatever may get the game a month before me, but they can only put their video up the same time as me. So it's more fair. And I think it's generally kind of right now, that's a pretty fair system. Early copies are provided to the press gets to play them and kind of take their time and quietly think over what's the right way to review this, what's the right way to play this, what's the right way to make videos about this, and then publish them a little bit before the game actually launches. And it's good it happens just before the game launches, because then we actually have the ability to tell you, hey, this is really good, you should get this, or by the way, actually, this is terrible and you definitely, definitely shouldn't get this. So that's good for the players as well. In terms of the specific case of Bethesda versus Kotaku, I think Bethesda might have got a little bit overexcited there, to be honest, because I don't think Kotaku really did anything worse than just kind of reposting theories and speculation. And of course, there are things we don't know about the ban. It kind of, you know, if, for example, it's a ban forever and ever and ever, that's definitely a bit unfair. If it's a ban for, you know, say, a certain period of time, and then for the next big franchise, whenever the next Dishonored game, for example, comes out, when Dishonored 2 hits the shelves, then perhaps Kotaku gets an early press copy. That strikes me as fair. It's difficult to judge on individual cases, but I just kind of want to just kind of go over what my general thoughts on that actually were. The other thing I wanted to just kind of discuss in a little bit more detail before I crack on to the specific questions were, some people asked me kind of about live streaming in general, kind of what my plans for live streaming are, because if this goes out when I think it's going to go out, this will go out shortly before my first live stream, which will be this evening, i.e. the evening of the 20th. And people are asking me how much live streaming am I going to do. Well, it really kind of depends, because live streaming is a big unknown. It's very hard to say how much you're going to do of something before you've really done it. So kind of, there's two big questions, which leads into a bigger third question. Like, the two questions I'm going to have to ask myself from when I start live streaming is going to be, one, am I good at and enjoying it? So, you know, do I think I'm putting on a good show? Am I genuinely happy with the quality of what I'm doing? And do I enjoy doing it? The quality thing's important to me because I think kind of my best work is my heavily edited work, where I kind of might record for 2 hours and only produce a half hour video out of it, but it's very tightly edited. I think that's my best work. So kind of like, potentially, like maybe if I do 2 hours worth of playing Fallout Live, will I come out of that thinking, actually, you know what, there was only about 45 minutes of really good stuff in there, the other hour and a quarter I could very easily edit out, in which case am I feeling like I'm putting out inferior work? In that case, I think kind of that will kind of put me off doing kind of much more live streaming, or at least, well, I will do it, but not on such a regular basis. And the other thing, of course, is, you know, do people actually show up and do people enjoy it? Do people think it's as good as my edited videos? And do all of you guys and the community, the whole wider community in general, does everyone actually want to show up and want to enjoy it? And that kind of all leads into the question, is it a worthwhile use of my time? Because if very few people, you know, if I'm not enjoying it as much and very few people are coming out to actually see it, then like, it's probably not a good use of my time. I should be using that time to make more videos or make better videos. So I think that's a kind of a big, interesting question. Like, the stuff that live streaming is going to be very good for, though, the stuff it's going to be very good for is the games I kind of either can't or don't really want to put on YouTube. So, for example, like some games I might want to do a very kind of very long look at, but potentially they're like slow burn games, like the two kind of genres I think kind of that works for most, like strategy games and big RPGs, where I feel like, you know, say take a big RPG where there's a lot of random battles, for example. Like, if I were doing, like, a tightly edited video for YouTube, I'd cut, like, 99% of that out. So, in some ways, that probably puts me off doing many RPGs on the channel, because, like, I feel like I'd probably need to play them for, like, 5 hours just to get one decent, solid video out of them, because I'd be just cutting out so many random encounter battles, which I think is kind of one of the things that kind of puts me off them. And strategy games, I think, are kind of the same, because strategy games, it's a bit harsh. Strategy games sometimes kind of boil down to a lot of kind of like either slow thinking if it's turn-based or if it's kind of real-time, a lot of kind of long pushing backwards and forwards type stuff. I don't know. I'm probably kind of being a bit, I'm probably going to be unfair there. But like those are kind of two genres of games I don't do too much on YouTube, but I probably do more of on live stream. Other games that kind of I would like to do are also the games that like can't really be so much on YouTube because the publishers aren't so kind of YouTube friendly, for example. So Knights of the Old Republic, and this is, I can't remember if I've said this on Patreoncast already, I am planning to do a full day of kind of, and I would literally like do as like a, I don't know, like 10 a.m. through to 6 p.m. or into the early evening or whatever, like 10 hours of Knights of the Old Republic. Because Knights of the Old Republic I've never really played. I've like touched like someone else's copy of it before, but like I've never played it for myself. But of course, own, you know, Star Wars, music, copyright, and now flipping Disney owned Star Wars and they're bad on, you know, content ID stuff as well. It's the sort of thing where, like, some people do put it on YouTube and get away with it, but it is a risk and I don't really want to take it. So if I was ever going to do Knights of the Old Republic, I would probably just kind of, I'd put it up on, I'd just do it on Twitch. And I'd just say, if you want to watch this, go watch the archive on Twitch. I'm not putting it onto YouTube. Or, you know, as I say, there's, like, big, long-form strategy games, like Bedlam. People have wanted Bedlam to come back. Bedlam, I feel like, is a really good candidate for a live stream, because I'd just like to like sit down and play that for 3 hours straight and just kind of talk over my decisions with people. But I'm not sure it would necessarily be the most thrilling video, but I think it would be a really good one to, like, you know, talk about it as I'm doing it with the chat. So like, that's a perfect candidate for that sort of thing. Bounty Train that I did a while back. That's another candidate. I'd love to just kind of do a full playthrough of that from start to finish, because it's not a very long game. Planet Base would be lovely just to kind of tinker with while I was just kind of talking to the chat at the same time. That'd be a lovely game to do a kind of live stream for. So those are the sort of games I think I will be doing on live stream. But we'll see how the first one goes tomorrow. We'll see if it's an absolute disaster. If it's an utter disaster, then maybe we won't do too many more live streams. But we shall see. It will be very fun to kind of see how that goes. Okay, let's move on to individual questions, which I will go through, because as usual, I've kind of blabbered on the main topics a little bit too long, to be honest. Fallout 4, kill everything. Is it possible? Kind of. I mean, I'm making notes about it, and like I can see kind of some things that might be fun to do. I'm not sure, like, I think there's too many essentials to do a kill everything, which is kind of the same reason I've never really kind of thought about Skyrim kill everything. But I think there might be something we could do kind of, like, Fallout 3 kill everything was not really strictly about killing everything. Fallout 3 kill everything was about killing everyone that you could kill and just being the biggest jerk possible. It was more about being the biggest jerk possible and being as kind of gleefully evil as possible, rather than strictly having to kill everyone. Because you always know there are exceptions in Fallout, like children, for example. So, like, if I could just kind of get over the fact there are some essentials, I think there's maybe not quite as many as I initially thought there were. I mean, it's, I don't think it's the essential tag is as badly abused as it is in Skyrim, for example. I think it might be worse than in Fallout 3, but not as bad as in Skyrim. So I think there might be something we could do, but to be honest, I'm kind of more interested in trying to no kill, or you only live once the game first. Or at the bare minimum, do just a couple more runs just to familiarise myself with the game flow a bit more. I want to do something on survival, obviously. I kind of want to do some different endings. I want to kind of build a melee character and just do some like little one-off videos looking at different builds. Maybe actually kind of building a slightly revised version of some of the characters I laid out in my builds video. There's possibly going to be a kill everything at some point, I'm not quite sure. On the same topic, New Vegas kill everything remastered. Will that use mods? It might be slightly modded, but aesthetic only. I really don't really like kind of making changes to the gameplay for the most part. Unless I see something that's like ridiculously impossibly like too cool or anything. But like, I don't like adding stuff that like damages the balance of the game, like giving myself, you know, very powerful armor too early, giving myself weapons that are too powerful too early, anything like that. I'd kind of rather have it kind of basically be a vanilla game just with some slight aesthetic tweaks. So like Nevada Skies, for example, if I can get that working properly, because I understand some people have some slight issues with that, I might go for something like that. But it will mostly be the vanilla game, I'd say. Mass Effect, will I ever go back to 2 and 3? I'm still kind of waiting on that moment I realised the amazing rule set to go back to Mass Effect, because no guns in 2 and 3 is kind of just a bit grindy, because there's so many enemies that basically just have, defences and protections that are just blatantly hard countered by a particular ability. So for example, if I just run into something that's got like, you know, the armour on it, the yellow armour, like the kind of the thick armour, I'd basically just be spamming like incinerate or whatever at it, waiting for incinerate to come out, cast incinerate, wait for incinerate to come back, cast incinerate. It would just kind of be boring. And you know, throwing warp at bionic shields, throwing overload at shields. It would just be, I don't think it would be that interesting, to be honest. I mean, maybe I should just do like an insanity run or something, because I've never actually done an insanity run of Mass Effect 2. And I love Mass Effect 2. Is it my favourite in there? No, it's really difficult. I think possibly Mass Effect 1 might be my favourite in the franchise. But Mass Effect 2's up there. It's got some wonderful moments. I'd love to share it with the channel and kind of talk about why I love it quite so much. But I've never just quite figured out what the right rule set for Mass Effect 2 ought to be. No guns could theoretically work a lot better in Mass Effect 3, because once they got kind of the weight of your loadout system or whatever it was in Mass Effect 3, so if you weren't carrying any guns at all, or only carrying a very tiny little crappy gun, then obviously your cooldown for all your powers was so short, you could spam powers really effectively. So that made it a bit more interesting, especially with some of the powers. I think kind of the Vanguard is a really interesting one in Mass Effect 3. I don't think the Vanguard doesn't quite work so well in Mass Effect 2, it's just a bit more limited, didn't quite have as many interesting abilities. I'd love to, is the short answer, but I just don't quite know what I'd do with it yet. Please do let me know if you've got a really good idea. Classics! Classic games I'd like to do are, in a perfect world, there's so many classics I'd like to do, but so many of the classics that I like are Nintendo games, because I used to be a Nintendo kid. I had the Super NES, I had an N64, I had a GameCube, and like, you know, if you had a GameCube and you've still got like your collection of GameCube games, like, you'll probably notice that the vast majority of games that were great on the GameCube were Nintendo either first or second party games. So there's loads of games I would like to do, but I kind of can't. And like, I could probably get away with it, to be honest. Nintendo don't really issue copyright strikes, but they do issue content IDs quite a lot. And not as much as they used to, and like, so there's varying reports on how aggressive they are with it. But to be honest, like, It's also partly just like a solidarity thing. Like, Nintendo are being dicks. Nintendo are being dicks to YouTubers, and they're making it very hard for YouTubers to earn a living if they want to cover Nintendo games. So I kind of, even though I could probably get away with it, I don't really want to give them the oxygen of publicity, to be honest. I mean, if Nintendo ever sort out their ideas and stop being dicks and live in hope that that will one day happen, I would love to cover Eternal Darkness. Eternal Darkness would be the first thing I would do a full playthrough of, because Eternal Darkness is a spectacular game. Flawed, absolutely, and definitely there's some, in the later levels, there's some not as good levels in there. But a spectacular game, well worth examining. Beautiful, beautiful game. I'd love to do that. You know what else I'd love to do? Mickey Mania. Oh, Mickey Mania on the Super NES. What a fantastic platform that was. Beautiful. Just absolutely beautiful. Donkey Kong Country on the Super NES as well. They're still releasing 2D games today that don't look as good as Donkey Kong Country on the Super NES looked like. That is a spectacular achievement for a bloody 16-bit console. That's just utterly incredible. The older Star Fox games, I'd love to kind of do some more stuff with, like Lilac Wars and the original Starwing. Sorry, Lilac Wars is Star Fox 64. It had a stupid title in Europe for whatever reason, but Star Fox 64. And I'd love to do Skies of Arcadia. I love Skies of Arcadia. But the thing is, like, it's not just that it's a Sega game and Sega are not so YouTube friendly. It's also because I know you'd be cutting out so much of it because it's random encounter battles. I feel like Skies of Arcadia could be like a 6-hour long stream just to kind of go through it while talking to people. I feel like that could be a really good live stream candidate potentially. Now, here's a really interesting question. This one was fascinating. Someone asked, do I ever worry about being typecast as the Fallout guy? Yes, actually. But I don't really call it worried. It's more, I'd more say it's determination. I'm determined that that's not going to be the case. It's not going to go that way. That I'm not just going to do nothing but Fallout. So when people kind of, you know, leave comments on the videos like, hey, why isn't this Fallout? Why didn't you do Fallout this evening? It's like, nah, I'm not even dignifying that with a response. It's like, it's not healthy for the long-term future of the channel if I just do one thing. I think it is, you know, avoidable in the long run. Like, people, it's very easy to forget that, like, some channels that are generalist channels now didn't used to be generalist channels. Nerdcubed, you know, well, one, had an existing community off website and a kind of a webcomic. But, you know, originally that was overwhelmingly a Minecraft channel before it diversified and started doing, like, a little bit of everything. And to be honest, our one-off general videos do perfectly fine next to Fallout 4. Like, at the time of, like, recording this, just this last week we had Star Wars The Clone Wars out, as well as a lot of Fallout 4. Star Wars The Clone Wars got almost as many views as one of the more recent episodes of Fallout 4 did. They kind of both got in the, like, I think they're both into the 20,000. So there was very little difference. Fallout 3 You Only Live Once is absolutely kind of got the most attention, but then Fallout 3 You Only Live Once and the Only Live Once series in general has had, like, a fair bit of press spotlight on it. So I don't mind it, because it's a good way to build the channel, being known for a game that's very, very popular. But I do want to keep the channel diverse. This kind of feeds into, like, another question that came up, where someone asked me, like, are there any big changes planned for the channel? I wouldn't call it planned, but I've always got my eye out for, like, trying to find something else I could become known for as well as Fallout. I would love to find something other than Fallout that we've got, like, a big community where they're there for the other thing that's not Fallout. So it's not just, like, a very big Fallout community, of which the Venn diagram, there's also a lot of people who are, like, you know, want to watch everything. I would love it if there was, like, another group of people who were there for something else. I'd love it if we could just, like, stumble across an indie game where we get really well known for that as well. That would be lovely. I would love to do that in 2016, but I can't really plan that because I don't know when that might happen to come along, for example. Am I aware of my page in the Nerdcube Wiki? Indeed. In fact, I contributed to it. I do keep an eye on it, and the image that's up on it, I provided that image. That is me hiding behind a rock. I discussed that with Matt, actually, and I offered to provide him a picture of myself wearing a hat, hiding behind a rock, so there's just kind of a very thin line of eyes. Very thin line of eyes available. Like, me and privacy are strange bedfellows. I do kind of value my privacy quite highly, and I try to kind of, I don't like images of me just kind of floating around at random. I've always left that very first video on the channel just sitting there. I don't draw attention to it. It just sits there. The very first video on the channel is a vlog we put together back when Many a True Nerd was tiny and it was going to be a thing that both Claire and I were doing, and it was going to be a general interest geek vlogging channel. Had nothing to do... Well, it was going to have gaming on it, but it was going to have lots of other stuff too. And we just did a vlog, and it was, you know, watched... The day we put it out, it was watched by 10, 20 people who were our friends who emailed it round to, and we thought it was funny. And it's got both my and Claire's face in it, and it was just there. And I just leave it there. And occasionally people stumble across it, and like it just kind of quietly gathers thousands and thousands of views as people just kind of stumble across it. And I love the comment section in it now, because it's like, oh my god, you have a face. Yes. Yes, I do. The sound that's produced is not just produced by a strange musical instrument that I plug into my single ear hole of my otherwise holeless face. I do indeed have a face. Yes, much like you, I have eyes and nose and a mouth and other things like eyebrows. Sorry, I got distracted there. But yes, I don't really like kind of images of me just kind of floating around. So I just kind of, I offered to send Matt like an image for the wiki, where it was just kind of like an old holiday photo of me hiding behind a rock. Was that taken in Pompeii? I think that's from Pompeii, if I recall correctly. That's me hiding behind something in Pompeii, just kind of peering over the top of a rock. You can just see a slither of my eyeline, which I quite like as a photo. So yes, I do keep an eye on that. I do keep an eye on that page, and I helped. Actually, I didn't write it. I thought it would be too much to write it. I've made some changes to correct a couple of incorrect details, but other people wrote it. I don't actually know who did. Possibly Matt did. What am I going to be playing soon? Okay, some games that are coming up. One that was a suggestion from the community, 60 Seconds, which is kind of like a cross between like a strategy game, but with a kind of a bit of a kind of a Fallout-y thing to it, where like you have 60 seconds to gather some stuff from around your house, then an atomic bomb falls, and then you basically have to dive into a Fallout shelter, and with whatever you were able to grab in that 60 seconds, you have to survive for as long as you can. It's an interesting little game, and I'll kind of be doing that very, very soon indeed. I want to play Daikatana, famously one of the kind of the biggest disasters in the whole history of gaming. I think that sounds really good fun. I've never played it before, but I kind of want to play that while talking about the history of it. I think it's a fascinating story, the story of John Romero and Pry. It's a fantastic Greek tragedy of a story. It's got hubris and nemesis in it, and oh, it's a beautiful story. It's like Hippolytus, if Hippolytus had game development rather than charioteering and a bull that comes out of the sea. But yes, Moonrise is a fascinating game, because Moonrise is going to die in 10 days. Moonrise was like I think it's free to play now, but it wasn't always free to play. But it's like an online free to play RPG thing, but it hasn't been very successful. And I think it was like they like designed it to be like a kind of a slightly like dark 3D version of Pokemon, which kind of sounds really cool. And I really like the sound of it. But they're finally pulling the plug on it at the end of this year, on like December the 31st, the end of the 31st. So I'm actually going to go and start playing it, and I want to kind of play it on like the 30th and the 31st, and just kind of explore this dying, dead game just before they pull the plug. So I just want to go kind of wander on. I just love the idea of a universe that's collapsing, of the last days of this universe before it gets wiped out. There's something lovely and eerie and end of the worldy about that. So I want to go and explore a universe as they pull the plug on it. And I want to do a very quick challenge run in Resident Evil 4, which is one of my favourite games of all time. But I'm not going to say what it is yet. But yes, I think all of that should happen before the end of this year or very soon into the beginning of next year. That's kind of some stuff that I've got coming up. Is Fallout 4 a Fallout game? I briefly touched on this on Twitter, so apologies if you saw me answer this kind of... Actually, I didn't even mean to answer this question on Twitter. I just kind of came to me while I was thinking on Twitter anyway. Yes, Fallout 4 is a Fallout game, even though it has actually changed. And I think this was kind of an answer to the people like saying, Fallout 4 is a great game, but it's not a Fallout game. I don't buy that. I don't buy that. New Vegas changed a lot of stuff from 3. In fact, Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas is kind of one of the most spectacularly effective arguments you can make for how two different teams with two different intentions can make such radically different games using the exact same game engine and effectively very similar core mechanics. Like, the difference between 3 and New Vegas is staggering. And then if you consider like, you know, New Vegas versus 3, and if you consider Tactics versus anything else in the series, and if you consider 3 versus 1 and 2, and if you consider 2 versus 1, there's basically not a single pair of games in the Fallout franchise where you think, actually, you know what? These two were so similar to each other that they didn't really add anything new in. So this is clearly the Fallout game. Fallout 1 was massively expanded upon, and kind of the ethos and the way it flowed and everything changed into 2, and Tactics and Brotherhood of Steel are radically different. And then 3 was different again, and New Vegas completely changed everything. And now 4 has gone and changed. Arguably 4 has actually changed less versus 3 than New Vegas did. I'd argue that New Vegas is actually more different to 3 than 4 is. So I'd say that if you're going to go down the line of Fallout 4 isn't a Fallout game because it's not similar enough to 3, then New Vegas is even less of a Fallout game. And God help you putting that argument to people who played the old Fallout games, because 3 is insanely more radically different to 1 and 2 than either 4 or New Vegas are to 3. So yes, 4 is a Fallout game, and I'd say it's a damn good one too. Do I mind the Radiant quests in Fallout 4? It's a hard thing to evaluate on the first playthrough, because Radiant quests are fundamentally something I'm going to spend less time on than the main quest. Whereas if I'm actually replaying the game, Radiant quests will probably be welcome, because it'll mean there's a bit more variety. Once I kind of know how all the main quests go, Radiant quests might be more interesting. So I will know after I've done a few different playthroughs whether I mind the Radiant quests or not, or if I actually add something to the game, they make it a bit more interesting. Because in Skyrim, I didn't like the Radiant Quest, but I'd rather they had the Radiant Quest in Skyrim than you always go into the same place to get the same items. It did at least keep things a little bit mixed up, and occasionally mean you found new areas you hadn't explored before on kind of after you've done several playthroughs, which was nice. So kind of, I think they might be good. They're certainly not as good as like having loads of quests, but Fallout 4 does have a lot of named marked quests too. Way more than they had in 3, but probably less than they had in New Vegas. I don't know, I'd need to check. And a load of unmarked quests too. So like, I think Fallout 4's got a very healthy number of quests, but it's a bit too early for me to comment on whether Radiant quests in that game are a good or a bad thing. What am I particularly excited for in 2016? Two games that I will flag now I think are very likely to be excellent and probably in my top 10 of the year when they happen. One, Hitman. The new Hitman game, I think they're making all the right noises about it. I think it's going to be spectacular. Ukulele as well. Ukulele, I think, will be fun, and Ukulele will be joy. I just look at the kind of the team and what they've said about what they want to do with Ukulele. I think it's going to be really, really good fun. So I think Ukulele is going to be lovely. His Dark Materials. Is it going to be terrible? It might suck, but who knows? I like the old TV version of Neverwhere, so His Dark Materials might be good. Just because they made a very, very terrible film out of the first part of His Dark Materials doesn't mean the TV series is going to be terrible. It could be good. I don't look at like His Dark Materials and think fundamentally that it can't be filmed. It's not like one of those properties where I think kind of people look at it and say, no, you cannot realistically make a film / TV series out of that. I think you could make a good thing out of it. It just, you know, if you've got the right people involved, and I haven't really seen much about it, to be honest. How did I meet Claire? I met Claire before I did gaming stuff and before I made videos for YouTube. What I did in my spare time was I did a lot more writing. I did loads of writing, actually. Like I've written like a few manuscripts that are like over 100,000 words. Like nothing I'd ever consider like even remotely ready to send to a publisher, for example. But I've done some stuff that's really, really bloody long. In the past, I've written some really, really long stuff. But like, I did find it enjoyable. I found it like a little bit frustrating too. And like, I think kind of YouTube more scratched my itch for slightly more. If I say instant gratification, that makes me sound like I've got kind of no patience and no diligence or whatever. But like, the thing is, if you want to genuinely kind of write a book, it can take like, if you're also working at the same time, it can take like a year or years to write a full-length novel in your spare time. And then, like, another year on that to, like, you know, edit it and redraft it. And then, like, maybe, like, another 6 months to do the second redraft before you're ready to even start thinking about something. It's, like, 3.5 years of your life, and you don't even know what you're going to get at the end of it. It's something you want to do. It's a very slow-burn thing. I think, like, if you want to do that, you've got to really have a burning love of the written word, like an insanely strong love of the written word, or you've just got to know, like in your heart of hearts, that your life will not be complete until you are a published author. And for Claire, I think that's kind of true. That's more true for Claire than it is for me. Whereas for me, I always wanted to kind of, you know, be creative and express myself somehow. But this scratched that itch. YouTube scratched that itch just fine. And I like the fact that I can make something and publish it the same day or the following day. So I can kind of, you know, as I come up with ideas, I can make them into reality immediately and put them out into the world, you know, within 24 hours. That's nice too. It's nice to be able to get that feedback on things, which is always lovely. Indie games. Would I like to do more indie games? Yes, I would like to do more indie games. I kind of like getting into the habit of trying to do like at least one indie game a week, probably just one a week. So like, ideally, I mean, indie game, it's hard to define. Like a game that's like had a small team behind it, I mean, that's fine. Like I just did, the time this goes out, like yesterday I put out that video on Fairy, Legends of Avalon. Now that's definitely not an indie game, but it was clearly made by a small team. So I think that kind of counts for that. Like, indie games are really interesting because indie games, they very often got interesting ideas and very often they're willing to take more risks than AAA publishers. So they sometimes come up with really, really fun new ideas, which is why I think they're kind of worth watching. So yeah, I do like indies and I do want to do kind of at least one indie game a week. Sometimes you just stumble across something spectacular, like The Curious Expedition, for example, which I think is a fantastic game and will go on to be just better and better as they work on it. On a similar topic, someone specifically flagged the game 7 Days to Die. Honestly, I'm not really so much into kind of the zombie crafting survival thing. It's never really appealed. Though, question for you guys. If I wanted to give like one zombie crafting survival type thing a go, what's like the single best one to kind of, for someone who's not really kind of played many of them and isn't really sure about the genre, what's the best one to win me over to them? Because I will certainly kind of probably make a video out of one of them sooner or later, so it'd be good to know what the best one to start with would be. What do I do with my free time? Oh, blimey. This was a depressing question when I got it and read it, because I kind of sat down and thought about it and thought, I don't really have any, do I? Which is very, 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 very sad and depressing. That's generally true. And that's partly because, you know, because I've just gone full time over the past kind of few months, there's a lot I need to do to like get Many a True Nerd properly set up in various ways. So it kind of, you know, is set up as it should do. And like, well, what I'm recording is, what time is it now? It's 11:10 at night right now. So like at about 10:30 in the evening, I started recording this Patreon cast. It's 11:10 or so now, and I'm expecting it to probably be another 10 minutes or something. So 11 o'clock at night, I'm still working. I think I started working at, when did I start working today? I think I started working at about, well, work. The thing is, it's really hard to define work when you're self-employed and you're a YouTuber. So you get up in the morning, I get up in the morning and I get my breakfast and I sit down and I will turn on my computer and the first thing I'll load up will be, I'll load up kind of like the Many a True Nerd email account and Twitter and Reddit, and I'll skim through my notifications, my messages, my emails. So like I go straight into checking my emails over breakfast while, you know, I'm still eating my breakfast, having a cup of tea and I'm still in my dressing gown. You know, this is one of the things I've really had to get into. Like as a self-employed person who now lives and works at home, I've set myself some rules, which is every single day you get yourself a shower, I get dressed properly, I never have a pajama day, it's very important, and I always leave the house. Every single day I go out for a walk or a jog or just to go to the shops, but I try to actually go and do something. Like I get myself some form of fresh air and exercise every single day. I'm not allowed to stay in the house for just an entire day and just not go outside, because I feel like that'll be very, very unhealthy. But yeah, so kind of my free time's a bit weird, 'cause it's a bit spread out. Like very often I'll work into the evening because I want to be around for the US folks. So like I want to be answering comments and being active on kind of Reddit and Twitter like up to midnight and 1 a.m. so that like the American folks who are kind of just getting home from school or work or whatever have a chance to kind of chat with me in the evening a bit. But that means I get up a bit later too, because I went to bed so late because I was talking to people online into the evening. And like, does that count as work? Like, you know, just being on Reddit, being on Twitter, doing what would, if you were doing it as a job, you'd probably call yourself like a community moderator or a community manager or a social media manager or something like that. So I mean, like it's very, very odd, because like this kind of just absorbs all your time. Because from the moment I get up in the morning, where I'm just kind of, you know, checking emails, to like just before I go to bed at night, when I'm still just kind of keeping half an eye on like Twitter and Reddit, just to kind of talk to people and kind of reply to comments, it kind of like eats your entire day. But equally, you know, you get to just kind of, if you want to like step away from your computer for an hour or two just to go for a jog, you can do. So, you know, I read a bit. I like reading like news journals. I like just kind of going down to a park that's down the road from us, stuff like that. But like, I don't really have a major hobby. And part of the reason for that is because when I was doing a full-time job, YouTube was my hobby. And now YouTube's become my job. And like, now I probably need to find a new hobby to fill the gap that YouTube was, if you see what I mean. So like, I haven't really found what that thing is yet. But yeah, it's a bit of a difficult one. So yeah, I guess I just kind of, you know, I just kind of try and get out and about, to be honest. I just like going for a walk. That's fine by me. I like going for a walk and I like kind of reading news journals. I don't read huge amounts of fiction though. I like reading nonfiction more. I get like a slow news journal, which is basically like a big kind of news digest that talks about the news that happened 3 months ago, but then tells you like what the consequences of it were. Because like, one of the things I don't like about news today is because of Twitter, and this is kind of Twitter's fault, not just Twitter but other things as well, but like when news happens, everyone wants to break it and everyone wants to be on the hashtag and everyone's like, oh my god, you've all got to pay attention to this. And then by the, like 6 hours later, we've all moved on to the next crisis. Oh, there's an earthquake here. Right, let's pay attention to that. Oh, there was a bombing here. Let's all pay attention to that. Oh, there was a flood here. Let's all pay attention to that. And like, you forget, like just like 48 hours ago, you know, we were all caring about some huge tragedy somewhere else in the world. But now we've completely forgotten about that. We've forgotten about the earthquake in Nepal. We've forgotten about the flooding somewhere else. We've forgotten about all of that because we moved on to the next big crisis. News cycles are really, really short. So what I like about slow journalism, it basically says 3 months ago, this happens. And then here's what happened over the subsequent 3 months. You know, the following commitments that were made to help these people were met. The following wasn't. Here was an unintended consequence. And here's how it all ended up. And I really love that. I love that. It's called, it's called delayed gratification. I don't know if you can get it elsewhere in the world. I don't know if it's Britain only. But I love it. I love slow journalism magazines. They cheer me up no end. Someone asked me about kind of my setup, kind of my PC, my computer, my things like that. What I will do is I will actually put on screen right now, I'll just put a photo of the little kind of desk. Like I said, I really sit at a really tiny desk. I need to get a bigger desk. I've just got my computer just kind of set up, but it's just like set up in the corner of a room at the moment. What I need to do is I need to get a bigger desk. I think you can kind of see there the screen. And I picked that screen specifically because it's like, it's 16:9. It's actually like it's perfectly fits 1080p resolution. But because of that, the speakers don't quite fit on. Obviously, that's my actual computer down there on the right to the side of it with the horrendous mess of wires. So I don't know if that's going to be in the picture or not. And then I'm not sure if you'll be able to see this, but under the desk, there's one of my old PCs that is currently being held together by tape because I slightly broke the front of it when we moved place earlier this year. Oops. But what I'm going to do actually is I'm going to move like a proper, really big, detailed video on. I mean, someone asked me like about like editing and stuff. I'm going to do a really big, deep video about like how to be a YouTuber that's going to kind of cover like hardware, software, recording, everything. It's going to like cover all the. It's probably going to be huge. Maybe I should make it like a little bit of a video series actually. Actually, that's probably a more sensible idea. It'd probably be more digestible as like a series of short videos. They wouldn't be like the main videos on those days. They'd just be like extras. But I kind of like the idea of it. Because I feel like hopefully like, you know, we're approaching 150,000 subscribers. I think I've got enough experience that actually I can now kind of talk as not quite an authority, but like a bit of an authority on how to set up a YouTube channel. So I'm going to kind of make a video about that, about the editing and the capturing, about absolutely everything. And finally, someone had some like questions about Claire. So like someone said they were moving abroad soon and wanted Claire's point of view. I can't tell you Claire's point of view on that right now because she went to France. She's visiting home at this exact moment in time. But I will have Claire as the special guest on next month's Patreon cast and she can talk about that and other stuff. In fact, when I ask for questions for next month's Patreon cast, I will actually specifically flag, by the way, Claire's going to be the special guest. Anything you want to say to her. There was also a question about, like, you know, why she came here in the first place. That was part of, like, the second part of the question about how we met. Obviously, I don't want to kind of comment on her behalf about how it is she decided to come here. So she can answer that next month when she's here, to also talking about tips for moving abroad and anything else that comes up for her. Yes, that is the Patreon cast. They're always longer than I expect them to be. They're always flipping longer. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call it there, and there will be another Patreon cast soon. Obviously, if you want more details on any of these questions, do just leave a comment below. I will keep an eye on those, and I will get back to you with any more detail on anything that you want. But in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, I've been John. This has been Many a True Nerd, and this has been the December Patreon cast. Have a lovely December with whatever holiday you may or may not choose to celebrate in that time. Thank you very much, and goodbye.